This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
So 2 days before the outcome of the Marriage Equality Postal Survey is announced, today's forum aims to explore the question, should Australia vote yes, what legislation is likely to be proposed? So our speakers here come from a range of backgrounds and experience. Our second speaker will be David Maher. David has been reporting LGBTI issues since the 1978 Mardi Gras. He is a reporter, biographer and social commentator who has spent most of his career working for Fairfax and the ABC. These days, he is writing quarterly essays and reporting for The Guardian. His books dealing with LGBTI issues include The High Price of Heaven, 1999, and Panic, in 2011. Throughout his career, he has reported and commentated on human rights, censorship, conservative politics, the political power of the churches, and LGBTI reform. Welcome, David.
For a surprisingly modest $1,000, you can buy on eBay one of the little enamel signs that used to hang in German shops in the 1930s. They say, Juden werden hier nicht bedient. We don't serve Jews. Now, signs like that could easily be retooled for the requirements of the Paterson Bill. In fact, I think it would be an act of candor and honesty for cake shops to put in their window, we don't serve queers. It should be clear to the whole community that this is a shop which, by upholding its political, its religious beliefs, won't serve queers. There might be some commercial implications there that would trouble the cake maker. The cake maker might like to keep it a little more secret. Probably few people in this room are troubled or even remember when the pill first became available in Australia and Catholic pharmacists wouldn't dispense the pill. It was a religious act to refuse. Funnily enough, they all do now because it's a commercial act of some importance. But I think some of those little signs would be really useful. We don't serve queers, we don't serve... And as Carolyn well points out, if you're given the freedom to decide for yourself who you're not going to deal with, it can be blacks, it can be Aborigines, it can be, well, Jews, actually. We don't serve Jews. Paterson's call for this kind of extraordinary demolition of anti-discrimination law goes well beyond the wishes of most, but not all, of the big opponents of equal marriage. The Anglican Church understands that it's extremely difficult to draft such law, and indeed that it would have, as its outcome, a demolition of anti-discrimination law that goes much further than they would wish. I understand, Rodney might be able to talk about this a little later, but I understand that the numbers simply are not there in Parliament to give individual conscience exemptions to anti-discrimination law. They're just not there. Mind you, the religions have given this a great deal of thought. I had an interesting hour or so last week with the Anglican Bishop Mike Stead, who is the head of the religious freedom group of the Sydney Diocese that, as you will recall, recently gave $1 million to the No campaign, not to domestic violence, not to food for Rohingyas, not to, but to the No campaign. And I was talking to Stead. Stead's given this a lot of thought. He's actually not terribly concerned about pastry cooks, pious pastry cooks, because as he pointed out to me, they do their work at a distance. What truly worries him is the pious photographer that he's going to have to spend 5 or perhaps 6 hours in the company of a couple of blokes who are getting married, or a couple of women who are getting married. None of this makes sense unless you understand that it comes from a profound repugnance to homosexuality. And what's happening now is the truth time in this debate, because the no case has been able, with extreme skill, to be able to hide what truly drives its passion, and that is a hatred of sexual diversity. Hatred. They've wonderfully cloaked this in discussions of freedom. And how interesting it is that it's a week after the vote closes that this bill suddenly appears. Too late to be debated when people might vote for or against it. Too late to be discussed. All too late, too late. Don't think for a moment that that is accidental. It's extremely cleverly done. Vague words, nice words, big words, big abstract concepts as the debate is going on. And then once the vote is done, here's what we demand. Here is what we demand. And here we all are, a little tired from this process. I'm amazed that anybody has come out tonight, and very grateful that you have, because the next round is the truth round. The next round is about what really drives these people and what they really want, which they are putting out on the table for the first time. Now, there are three aspects of these demands that I want to talk about briefly and then take up again when we're all discussing this in question time. The first I've already mentioned, which is, it is my understanding that the principal drivers of the no case, I'm not, except for the Australian Christian Lobby, are not really hanging out to tear anti-discrimination laws apart. The second point being, they actually love some aspects of anti-discrimination law and they are determined to hang on to them. And those are the exemptions which are granted in every state and territory except glorious, plucky, wonderful Tasmania, which allow religious bodies to refuse to hire people like me and people like many of you simply because of our sexuality and sack them if they find them on the staff. These blunt, broad exemptions to anti-discrimination law are heavily guarded by the faiths, while they actually praise themselves for not exercising the powers they've been given. The point of it all is that this is an area, a territory, which they have staked out and demanded and been given the privilege of being able to exercise employment law as they see fit. It's an aspect of the extraordinary Australian softness towards faith organisations which are not shared in other parts of the world. The third thing is this. You'll have seen reference to a thing called the no detriment. There are people out there saying there should be no detriment to anybody who still is advocating traditional marriage. An extraordinarily wide claim by some people that it would be an overarching principle of law in Australia in a way that has never, ever been done in this country. But again, the campaigners for the no case understand that it has to be narrowed, very narrowed. Some of them are saying there should be no detriment for free speech. I had a lively exchange with Bishop Stead last week where he was saying that there should be a new law to protect the employment of anyone who is still advocating for traditional marriage, while maintaining the right to fire anybody who is a pufta or lesbian. He couldn't see the contradiction. He had a very interesting way through, but he just could not see the contradiction. He understands, though, that this panoramic demand has to be limited. It's the second limitation that really matters, and it's the second limitation that turns up in the bill that was revealed this morning. And that is that there should be no detriment to organisations from government if they continue to advocate their Christian belief in traditional marriage. Now, what this is about avoiding in Australia the UK situation. For a long time in the United Kingdom, faith organisations have been told that if you are running a hospital or a school or a charity or an old people's home, you are free to hire and fire according to your religious beliefs until you accept a penny of public money. And when you accept public money, then you have to play by secular rules. That really frightens these people in Australia. Because the reality is that most of the big churches in Australia now survive as service providers. They survive not because their pews are full, but because they run good hospitals, good schools, good old people's homes. Their business is booming, and all of it is heavily subsidised by taxpayers. They do not want the money to stop. It is what most worries them. And there it is in the bill, to have a privileged protection from the possibility that the Australian community might start to think, should we really be paying for these organisations to put the boot into transsexuals, gays and lesbians? Should they be doing it with public money? And the place they fear that that question is really going to start to be asked is Victoria. They're really, really scared of Victoria, because Victoria is the state where, having been through the worst of the split, having been through the worst of the DLP, having lived with Santa Maria for all those years, Victoria is the one place in Australia that really understands the malign power of religion. We all understand the good that religion can do. This is a society that has experienced the malign political outcome of ideological religious battles. And therefore, Victoria is an object of profound concern for these people. This week, Victoria will probably make euthanasia legal. Victoria was a pioneer on same-sex, a pioneer on decriminalisation of homosexuality, a pioneer on cleaning up the law, abortion law, and they fear that Victoria will be where the penny drops. I didn't mean to make that pun, but the penny drops and the community starts to ask, why should we pay public money for GLBTI people to be discriminated against in the employment by faiths? And faith employment, they're the largest private employers in the country. Much more to speak about, but I'll leave it there until we get to questions. Thank you.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9. Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.